welcome back to another episode of The Thing. So excited about today's episode and so excited about the guest. Excellent guest today. Morgan is here. Do you know Morgan? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. I met Morgan through TikTok, as it's the way that I meet most people these days. Morgan kind of reached out through the messenger there and was like, hi, and was very friendly. But I was so excited to meet Morgan because it turns out Morgan's just like one of those amazingly talented people that just sort of flowed into my life. And I'm so glad I met this person because he's an incredibly talented musician and singer and songwriter who's had an incredible career, and we're going to be talking about it. We're going to be talking about that coming up on the show. But before we get into that, a couple things to look at. First, in anxiety land, just a little update. I had a dentist appointment today, and it's like the first big thing since the last episode when I talked about sort of the revelation that I've had about my anxiety, the reframe. So I've been doing all this reframing where I'm like, okay, I'm not trying to get rid of my anxiety anymore. I'm just trying to accept it and be softer with it. I've also had this like reframe where I'm like, oh, okay, so the way to beat anxiety or fear when it's up on top of you is to have a respect for it, respect that it's real and that it's there and that it's part of your emotional experience, but then acknowledge that the way that fear operates is it speaks really loud and it gets really up in your face. But if you just respect it and don't do what it says and let it like sit in the discomfort and let it happen, that's the way to overcome it, is don't do what it says. So when it's telling you to run, when it's telling you to turn around and get out or, you know, scream or stamp your feet, allowing that discomfort, allowing, you know, so that's my other reframe, allowing that to happen, but don't do it. Don't do it. And I had the dentist today, so it was my first chance to sort of put it to the test. I was like, okay, all week long, I had the anticipatory fear of like, here we go. I've got to go to the dentist and we're doing some work. We're drilling some teeth. At least we were supposed to be. And I woke up today not feeling good. And it's okay because I knew that was going to happen. I knew I wasn't going to be feeling good, so it's okay. This is expected. I meditated and stretched and I put on some meditative music. And I took my propranolol to lower my heart rate, and I took some L-theanine, which is like an organic supplement for anxiety, and I headed out to the dental office. And I just was determined, my plan of action was, no matter what happens, even if I start going into full-blown panic, I'm not leaving. I'm going to stay in that chair, and I'm going to let these people know that I'm uncomfortable and that I'm afraid, but it's okay. Let's move through the work, because this is, you know, it's temporary. It's like, I'm going to be talking to Morgan today on the show about riding waves, and my fear and my anxiety is a thing that comes in waves. And like, I kept having in my head, like, I've got like an hour to an hour and a half before I'm out of that office and I'm done with this and I don't have to feel this way anymore. So if I can just make it, if I can avoid turning around and running away, I can be done with this work. So I got into the office and it was not going well. It was bad. Like, I was having a hard time, and they were also like unsure of what teeth we were working on. And I was like, oh no, I need you guys to know this. I was like, I need you to know this for me. They were like, which teeth are we working on? And they were like pulling up the x-rays and going like, it's this one, right? And I was like, yeah, I think so. But like, I need you guys to know. I was like, please, like, somebody tell me that you know, that you're sure which teeth. And finally the dentist came in and she was like, no, it's only this tooth. We're only working on one tooth today. And I was like, okay, I thought we were working on three, but I'll take one. If she's sure that we're only working on one, then I'll take that. And I was like prepared. I was prepared to sit in that chair and go through the discomfort. So I want you to really know that I was going to sit there. But then I did start crying a little bit. I let them know. I said, hey guys, I'm having a really hard time today, but I'm here. Let's do it. And I started crying, and the dental assistant, her assistant that was there, goes, you know, we don't have to do it this way. And I was like, well, is there another way that we can do it? And she goes, well, you have to have surgery coming up anyway for your implant, because I'm getting an implant done. And she's like, they were going to put you under for the implant. So why don't, while you're under for the implant, why don't we just do this other tooth while you're under. And I was like, oh my God, that would be so great if we can do that. And she was like, yeah, no problem. Cause it's this, her brother is in the same office and he does the implant surgery. So she's like, yeah, my brother will do the implant and I'll come in and I'll do the tooth, you know, and we'll handle it all while you're under. And I was like, oh, thank God. And so I thought, cool. I sat in the fear and we figured out a plan and this is going to be a better plan for me. But then her brother comes into the room. This is why I'm telling this story. Is her brother comes into the room and he's like, hey, so in the past when you've been put under general anesthesia for dental surgeries, I used to do them. Every other time I've been put under was in Utah, and they have different laws in Utah. You can use propofol in Utah. You can't use that in LA because of Michael Jackson's fucking doctor. He ruined it for everyone. Now they can't use that drug in LA. So he was like, we're not allowed to use that in California. So we use a form of sedation where you probably won't fall asleep. You'll just be so heavily sedated that you won't really be able to like do anything. And he goes, and this is the worst part. So he's saying that, and already I'm like, I don't like this. I don't like this as much as just like being asleep and waking up and it's over. But I was like, okay, whatever. And this is what he says to me. This just shows, this is why I'm telling the story, is like, we live in a world full of people who are well-intentioned and well-meaning, but there are real people out there who just like don't know what panic disorder is and what anxiety is, and they don't actually get like how it, I mean, he even asked me, he was like, what is this? Like, what is happening? Why are you like this? And I was like, it's just how I am. And he's like, what, did something happen to you when you were a kid? Like, what happened? And I was like, nothing really. I've just always been like this, which like, you know, borderline inappropriate line of questioning from a doctor. It's just kind of like, hey man, you don't need to know why, like, cause what if something traumatic had happened to me? If I was like, yeah, my uncle, you know, diddled me when I was a kid and that, like, what if, and you're asking me that question just here, like, as I'm in the middle of a panic attack, like, what happened to you? You know, it's like, but this guy just like, doesn't really get what it is that's going on with me. But he goes, so with this other stuff we're going to do for you, you'll probably be awake. And he goes, but don't worry, even if you have a panic attack, you won't be able to like move your body. He's like, so you could just be like sitting in the chair kind of like crying. And he's like, and I've had this happen with patients before where they're still like super scared and they're like crying and shaking. But once it's over, they don't remember it. He's like, so don't even worry about it. You won't remember it. And I was like, hey man, that's the scariest thing I've ever heard. I was like, why'd you just tell me that? I was like, dude, no, you're telling me I'm going to be in like an awake state of sleep paralysis while having a panic attack and crying and like whimpering, but I won't be able to move because I'll be so heavily sedated, but it's okay because I'm not going to remember it later. So it's just going to sort of get shoved down into my subconscious. It's just going to sort of be repressed into my brain, this memory of sort of like being paralyzed in a chair while crying and shaking from fear while you cut my gums open. No, dude, that's why I want to be all the way asleep. Also, now I have to, for the next few weeks, have that image in my head of like, I'm walking into this office to be put into a state of waking paralysis while this person works on my mouth. But don't worry, I won't remember it later. Oh my God. So I guess I'm just sharing that to say like, yeah, people out there really don't know about this thing. he was trying to say something encouraging and he wound up saying the scariest thing. We're going to get to Morgan and my conversation with Morgan soon, but before we do, I want to take a stop here at a quick new segment on the podcast, old segment on TikTok. So this is the first time I'm doing this segment here on the podcast, but it's something I used to do on TikTok regularly. This is a segment called Of Course That Happened. See that? I've already got a drop for it. This is Of Course That Happened. This is a segment where things happen in the news that you go like, well, of course that happened. We all knew that was going to happen. So this is a Republican senator, or lawmaker, I should say. This is Representative Neil Collins from South Carolina lamenting his decision to vote for a string of anti-abortion laws, including one that was like had a heartbeat provision. This is one of those – a lot of people will talk about like, well, we need to have reasonable compromises. And this is one of those laws where it seems like a reasonable compromise that if an infant has a heartbeat, we should not allow abortion in those instances. So this guy voted for several laws, including one that had a heartbeat provision. And this is him lamenting that decision.
I voted for the Pain Capable Bill, the Fetal Heartbeat Bill, and Fetal Heartbeat has been for 6 weeks now. The second week that the Fetal Heartbeat Bill became law, a doctor called me out of Anderson. I live in Easley. A 19-year-old girl appeared at the ER. She was 15 weeks pregnant. Her water broke. And the fetus was unviable. The standard of care was to advise her that they could extract or she could go home. The attorneys told the doctors that because of the Fetal Heartbeat Bill, because that 15-week-old had a heartbeat, the doctors could not extract. So their only choices were to admit the 19-year-old until that fetal heartbeat stopped. I asked, how long does it take to stop? She said, seconds, minutes, hours, maybe days, or discharge. They discharged that 19-year-old. The doctor told me at that point, there's a 50% chance. Well, first, she's going to pass this fetus in the toilet. She's going to have to deal with that on her own. There's a 50% chance, greater than 50% chance, that she's going to lose her uterus. There's a 10% chance that she will develop sepsis and herself die. That weighs on me. I voted for that bill. These are affecting people, and we're having a meeting about this. It took that whole week. I did not sleep.
Yeah, that's just so like heartbreaking and frustrating to listen to, because it's kind of like, yeah, we told you, man. We told you and told you and told you and told you. Abortion is healthcare. Like, you listen to that clip and it's like, man, I wonder if only there was a way that this person could have somehow known that bills like that were going to lead to terrible situations for doctors and for people in the healthcare industry. If only someone had warned them, if only someone had said something. On one hand, it's nice to hear somebody be that clear-headed and see, oh, my position and my vote actually had some real-world ramifications that I didn't realize it would have, and I'm seeing now that I might have been mistaken. It's nice to see someone have that kind of contrition and come to that kind of realization. But on the other hand, it's so frustrating that it takes a conversation like that with a doctor for that person to realize that, like, because there's just, I mean, that information is available. It has been available that abortion is healthcare. It's not just something that people on the left want to do because they're immoral people who just want to kill babies. Like, it is a oftentimes life-saving healthcare procedure that is necessary. And it's necessary in lots of instances. It's necessary in instances where a fetus has a heartbeat. So you can't have these arbitrary cutoff points where you go, well, let's be reasonable here. We can't kill something with a heartbeat. Yes, we can. If it's going to kill the person carrying it. Yes, we can. And this is why bodily autonomy and medical freedom are so important, because now people really, what they want to know is, they're like, okay, fine, but I want to know what the specific reason is. I guess I could support you aborting a fetus if a doctor backs up that it's a legitimate reason and that we need to do it in order to intervene in some way to save a life. It's like, people want to know that. They want to make sure that your reason for doing it is right, because they have this idea that there's millions of people out there who are kind of gleefully carrying a pregnancy to 8 months, 8.5 months, and then just going and aborting it for no reason, just because they can. That they have this idea that this is a thing that regularly happens. It's not. It's not a thing that happens. But if it were to be a thing that occasionally were to happen under laws that just allow for abortion at any point in any case, here's the hard truth that I think that these people need to come to grips with is it's just none of your business. You are not entitled to know somebody's reason for getting a procedure done. You just aren't. And we can't have – that is – I mean, people on the right love to talk about slippery slopes, and that right there is a slippery slope. Once you start having legislation that requires people to disclose the specific reason why they're seeking a specific procedure and requires the healthcare professionals – to disclose what the reason is. So it's not enough for there to be reasoning that exists between the doctor and the patient, but the doctor would have to provide that reason to like law enforcement or in a court of law. So if a person got sued and they said, we think that this abortion that you had in the third trimester was unlawful and that you had it just because you're a hussy, and now that person and their doctor have to prove in court that it actually was life-saving, like we are throwing medical privacy out the window. And that's just not something I think we should want to part with, that or bodily autonomy. So it's just that people have to get used to the idea that, like, it's none of your business. It's none of your business why a person gets an abortion. Rest easy knowing that 99% of abortions are not done in a spirit of glee and skipping to and from the abortion clinic. For most people, it's a very serious decision. For most people, it's a tragic decision. For a lot of people, it's a really heartbreaking and difficult decision. And for that reason, from a compassionate stance, that's a great argument as to why that person should not have to disclose to anyone what is going on in their private life or in their personal life that is bringing them to this place where they need to seek this necessary healthcare procedure. Because it's likely that they're already having a tough time. And then you add to it the suspicion of self-righteous, self-proclaimed Christians who are saying, well, I need you to explain to me what the specific reason is so that I can deem whether or not the act that you're taking is moral. Well, that's just none of your goddamn business. Now, is it? All right, so there's that. Let's get to the interview. Like I said at the beginning of the episode, I am so thrilled to have met this person. I hope I continue to build a relationship with this person. Morgan is such a talented singer and songwriter and performer. I highly recommend that you go and look up his music after you listen to this episode. M-O-R-G-X-N. Go watch his music videos on YouTube. But he's had a very up and down ride in the music industry and as a performer. And he made a TikTok about it recently that I really related to. So I reached out and I was like, you know what? We should talk about this idea of riding the ups and downs of the pursuit of a dream. And I thought it was an excellent conversation. So here it is from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood. This is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer. And today I'm talking with my new friend, Morgan, about riding the waves. Oh my God, Morgan.
What's up?
What's up?
You know, it's just a chill Sunday with my dog, yep. My dog laying here, and I'm really happy to see you and be here.
I'm happy to see you too. We just talked about this, but I've talked about this before when I've had guests on, but like I was seeing you, but now I'm looking into my camera. So it looks to you like I'm looking at you and not ignoring you.
I know.
But if I actually wanted to look at you, I'd have to look down here. And then it looks like I'm not looking at you.
I feel like I've perfected the art of like absolutely like here's me looking at the camera, but like really it's this, but it's like I've perfected like looking at the camera and being like, oh my God, absolutely. Cause the alternative is that you're like, you're just looking down at something and you're like totally. And it, you know, anyways.
Yeah. It's like when people do TV interviews and like one of them's in like, you know, Baltimore and one of them is in like New York and they're like, it's great to see you, but they're just looking at a camera.
Absolutely.
And they have like they have an earpiece in and they're not actually.
Yeah.
seeing each other.
Where are you from, or where do you live, or do you live?
I'm from Utah, and I live in Los Angeles.
Okay, heard of them, both of them.
What about you? Where are you from?
Well, I am from Nashville, Tennessee, and as of 1 year ago, I'm living back in Nashville, Tennessee. I wasn't.
You're from Nashville. You're from the music town.
They say that I'm a unicorn, which I happily accept.
And what is that? I mean, like, meaning what in Nashville? That just that, like, because you don't sing country music, or just because you're like a person in the music industry who's actually from Nashville?
So I'll take both. But I think what it actually means is that I am somebody from Nashville who lives in Nashville, because a lot of the people, especially in music in Nashville, are people who like came here in pursuit of the music, and I just grew up here. I didn't have family. Yeah. I didn't have family in the music industry, so it wasn't like. It wasn't like something like I was aware that Nashville had this like music town. For me, to be honest, the minute I turned 18, it was either I'm going to die or I'm going to leave home and go figure out who I am and where I have to go. Do you know what I mean?
What was that about? Can you go into that?
Yeah. I mean, growing up in the South, being like, you know, I don't think I even knew the words gay, anything like that. Like, it was just like, I mean, I didn't know about it until people made fun of me for it, which is an interesting thing. Mm-hmm. Like bullying, you sort of have kids that will call you things that you might not even be aware of in yourself, you know, like calling you, I don't want to say it for, you know, trigger.
F-slur,
sissy, F-slur. My dog's about to drink water. Ladies and gentle thems.
Yeah.
Can you hear it?
I can hear the dog drinking water, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was just like, there was a point where I was so scared to be myself in this town, and this town was never going to allow me the room to be myself. So I had to leave home to go find that. I had to leave home to give myself permission to try things, to create things. And then most importantly, I had to give myself room to like learn to accept myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, Nashville proper, like that city, because is Nashville kind of a blue dot in the middle of a red state, or is Nashville also pretty conservative?
No, Nashville is a blue dot in a red state. That is, you know, that is a very true like picture of Nashville. Like,
yeah.
But it was like, it was still the South. I actually had a manager 10 years ago. I was like either going to move to LA or to Nashville. And, I, 10 years ago, this is, you know, not that far back, but 10 years ago, this manager was like, you will never make it in music as an openly gay person in Nashville, period. And full disclosure, that manager himself was a gay man, but there was still this like stigma around this town that even though it's a blue dot in a red state, you're still dealing with a town that is deeply in the South, and the predominant genre being country, it was like, you're not going to touch that if you're going to be who you are. So, you know, that all leads to, I had to leave home to find, you know, the sort of like support and strength really within myself, which is like, that really brings me back to like, obviously I have a big song called Home, and that journey feels important to leaving home to find out all this stuff. But as much as it's about leaving, my journey coming back here has been so crazy.
I watched that music video recently, and it's really powerful. It's like that, the imagery of the kid leaving home where he lives to find family and home amongst the community where he is like discovering his identity.
Yeah.
And that's a really, you know, it's like, it's really simple and succinct, but that's such a story for so many people in the queer community, is like, leaving the nest of where I was raised to find my people, because where I am, I don't feel like I can be myself. You know, in the current zeitgeist and nomenclature, it feels like everyone, there's a lot of talk about how just like, oh, it's everywhere nowadays. Like the cool thing is to be gay. The cool thing is to be trans. The cool thing is to be non-binary. Like it's in every TV show. It's in every movie. And people act like it's just like this it's like overwhelming the culture, and like it's just you can't swing a stick without like finding somebody who's identifying in some kind of way. And what I think is so short-sighted is people don't realize that it's like this is still like we're just at the very beginning of like queer people being able to be more regularly represented at different levels of entertainment. Like it's just still so new, even in the 2020s.
Yeah.
That we're like finally getting to this place.
Sometimes I even will be like, I'll be like, it's too saturated. It's too much. Pride is like too much. And then I will receive a message from like somebody's mother who's got a kid who's struggling. I mean, I'll cry, but I sang at my old high school last week and a mother came up to me and was like, my son who is 17 is you. You know, and what do I say, you know? And I was like, just give him or them or, you know, give them the room to be themselves and know that they have a safe space in you, a mother, because the truth is, yes, it's zeitgeist. And yes, you see it a lot, but for every story you see of like, you know, loud, proud looking commercial, all that stuff, you've also got kids who are scared because their parents are going to hurt them if they come out. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, my boyfriend, his, you know, grew up in a fundamentalist Christian community, and that is like not something that allows for people to A, not be in the church, or B, to be queer. Do you know what I mean? And then yes. The other part is that we're talking about something, gay marriage is what, 2015 it became legal? Like we're literally talking about 7 years ago. And we're talking about, you know, I'm one to speak about it, but in the world of the Roe v. Wade's, we're talking about something that within the last month you've seen a Supreme Court justice be like, so that thing about gay marriage or gay relationships, that's on the chopping block. Do you know what I mean? Like
oh yeah, we're having the debate again.
Yeah,
like fully, we are back into the debate. You go on Twitter and like conservative Twitter and conservative internet right now is like they're back to making their same old tired arguments that we've already had. That we're like, I thought we already had this argument and we already decided that you have a terrible position. Like we've already like established that you don't have a leg to stand on in this debate.
Yeah,
it's all just like the Bible says so, which like it. Kind of doesn't at all. And also like, and that's kind of it. Like that's all you really have. And then you go to stuff like, oh, well, this isn't like the traditional family model. Studies show that children do best in the nuclear family home of like a man and a woman. It's like, yeah, those are studies based on a time when there wasn't such thing as like gay families. So we didn't really have anything to compare it to. And like all of these arguments have been thoroughly debunked. We already did this close to 10 years ago. And we're back to doing it. But it's also like, we already did it in the 70s.
Yeah.
We already did it. Like, we keep doing it. So anytime it's like, it looks like progress has been made, it's just like, no, just wait a second. We'll be right back to having this conversation again in just a couple of years. That's why I'm like, yeah, it may look like you're seeing this stuff everywhere, but we are still in the middle of the fight.
I've stopped trying to pretend I'm not an elder millennial or whatever. I forget what I'm actually classified as, but like, not to sound like that literal person, but it's like, I didn't have, that was so Southern. I didn't have
the, back in my day,
I had to walk uphill both ways. I didn't have TikTok. I didn't have the internet to give me the sort of like, I'm not alone in this frustration and in this fight and in this feeling. And, you know, for everything that I'm sure you know more than me, that's annoying about the internet and social media and all that stuff. Cause I sometimes just have to like quit and literally go be like a desert fairy and just pretend I don't exist in time. But for everything that's hard about it, there's also so many, beautiful moments of seeing that you're not alone in this fight that, yes, we as society have been here before, but there are new tools. And, you know, that feels empowering and exciting to me.
Yes. And I want to talk more about that later on as we get into sort of the ride of your career. But while we're in this area. It reminds me a little bit of like when Barack Obama was elected and people wanted to go like, okay, cool. Can we put the racism discussion to bed? Can we just say like, we're done, that racism has been fixed and we don't need to talk about it anymore? And it's like, yeah, okay, we can if you guys stop being racist. But then they like kept being racist and like we kept having to like have the conversation. And they're like, well, didn't we did it. We elected a black guy. And it's like, cool, yeah, we elected one black person to president in the history of the country. And we continue to see police brutality and like an inordinate amount of violence in communities of color, and we continue to see marginalization of people of color. So like,
yeah,
sure, we had that progressive step forward. That does not mean we solved the problem. So like, yes, we are seeing increased representation of marginalized identities in the queer community. That does not mean we are out of the woods on on like homophobia, transphobia.
Very well said. I mean, the ricochet that is caused by a unhealed, you know, nation, like pretending that like one person, you know, of color elected is sort of a symbol that we've arrived. It is just the beginning. And because there are so many people that are angry and hurt and not willing to look at it and think that like, that's it, or got so mad at that, that's how we ended up in the mess that we're in. And that is the depth of politics, because it gets me so angry to tour the country, you know, and know that the thing is, like, I have a platform where I receive hate all the time, and sometimes I make cute little TikToks about it, and I can do that because I was that kid that was bullied. Do you know what I mean? But I didn't, mm-hmm. I didn't have like a platform to go then be like, hey, this is happening. You're not alone in that feeling. And also these things can roll off me and fall off. Because I see them at my shows. I see people come up to me that are so hurt by and scared by being themselves in a world that like will throw actual sticks and stones.
Yes. Yep. Well, I think that it's good for Nashville to have people like you. Not that I don't want you to come back to LA and hang out with me and like be in LA again, but I think it's good for Nashville. They need you, Morgan. They need you there.
There's something brave about being back in the South. And I'm not just calling myself brave, I'm humbly saying that there's something harder and deeper and scarier about being myself in a place that is the South. And it's why, like, I want more people to sort of like go into these communities that, you know, if they can, to bring new voices to these places. Like there will be a first openly gay mayor running for mayor in Nashville this fall. And I'm so excited to be here at a time where I get to see that change and be a part of that change.
Yeah, I mean, I'm originally from Salt Lake City, and like that was always part of the tug of war of whether to like leave to New York or LA, you know, go to one of the coastal cities to try to have more exposure to opportunity in the entertainment industry. But then there's also this thing of like, yeah, but Salt Lake always loses it, and towns like Salt Lake always lose their best artists to like the coastal cities and stuff. And these towns need these people to stay too, and they need these people to like continue challenging the local culture and art there. It's like you can really be controversial there. Like you can really like, you put on like a production of Angels in America and it's like a thing there. It's like a big statement in the community. Whereas if you do it in LA or New York, everyone's like, yeah, we've seen that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, when you tour the country and you're obviously playing shows, marquee shows in New York and LA and Nashville and Chicago and whatever, you could ask any person, honestly ask every musician that's on your show, but I don't think anyone is going to say that New York and LA are their favorite shows, because it's like, it's just a bunch of like industry people being like this in the back and then fans in the front or whatever. Now, Salt Lake City goes off every time. And the first time that I played there, I was, you know, I'm like, what is a gay Jewish boy from Nashville going to like encounter in Salt Lake City? And it was just wild. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just like electric. And, you know, I don't know why that is, but I would say that it's like, there are real people in every city. Do you know what I mean? Who are aching mm-hmm. for experience. And every time I go to Salt Lake City, I'm blown away at how incredible the people are, because you don't have to be in New York or LA to be incredible. You know,
I'm always like very proud of Salt Lake's pride. Like I like carry that with me to like LA and New York. I'm like, just so you know, the town I'm from has one of the biggest pride celebrations outside of the coastal cities. Like,
yeah.
So just so you know,
I played Love Loud with Dan from Imagine Dragons. I played that this year. You know, it's, you know, in a place like Salt Lake City, like pride becomes more, even more vital, because it's just like, you know, we want you to know you're not alone. I could cry all day, but yeah. It's like, we want you to know you're not alone. And like, we want you to see that boldly, that you're not alone, which brings tears to my eyes.
It's survival. There are people in Salt Lake who, and I'm sure it's the same way in the South too, where you're from. There are people who have really fought for their life and really fought for their, like, their right to live, and had to, many people who were, you know, pushed out of their families, pushed out of their communities, pushed out of their, like, their homes, and they had to, like you said, either die or thrive, like make a choice at a young age.
Thrive.
To embrace life. And so when you encounter those people and they are going off like that, it's like they're like screaming to the heavens, like, I made it.
Yeah.
I did it. And I had to fight for my, to be here, you know?
I know this is your show, really, but I'm cool. Like, where did you live in New York and LA? Is that
yeah,
your journey?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, I moved from Salt Lake to New York in 2015. I always thought I wanted to live in New York, and it just wasn't my town. And I never thought LA was going to be. And then I moved out here. And I was like, oh, wait, shit. I like it here so much more.
Yeah, you mean you can do things and the weather's nice? Like, that sounds really nice.
Yeah.
I did yep. Chicago, New York, LA, back to Nashville. So Nashville to Chicago to New York to LA, back to Nashville.
What was your favorite?
Oh, well, I've got songs about all of them, but I honest take, like, Chicago is fine. Don't need to live there. don't need to live there. New York still feels like an ex-lover that I have like a ton of baggage with, that I like, uh-huh. that I'll just like never really sort. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then uh-huh. LA might be like the love of my life. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I'll always know that love is possible, but, uh-huh. but Nashville is sort of like, Nashville's where there's like a, it's like a volcano here for me. There's just like, there's a ton of fire, and I wanted to come to a place. I needed to work some stuff out. I needed to give myself space, but that's like, we're getting beyond the beginning of my journey.
I can't even tell you how much I just related to what you just said, because I never lived in Chicago, but Chicago is one of those towns where, like, just visiting it the few times I did, I was like, I can't believe that, like, of the towns where people move to, like, try to make waves in the entertainment industry, I can't believe that this is, like, somebody's first choice. I can't, like, no I mean, I was going to say no shade, but, like, full shade to Chicago.
Yeah.
Like, it's so uncomfortable there from the weather. Like, I just am like, it's too cold, you guys.
Yeah.
It's too cold.
I went to college there, and they had us, we used to tape flyers to the ground during winter, because uh-huh. basically when people are walking around in winter, they just have their hood over their head, and there's no point in pasting signs on the walls because no one's looking up. So you would tape flyers to the ground with like protective tape, so it like stayed there, because people are just walking around like looking at the ground all day, you know, like
people are just miserably with a hood just pulled tight, hunched over.
I know,
walking as fast as they can, arms crossed in front of them, going fuck, fuck, fuck.
I look forward to being canceled for like for the shade of Chicago, but I and to those who choose it, like, literally, God bless. But like, uh-huh. It's nice. I'm a wanderer. Like, there's a version of wonder where I thought it was maybe going to be like, I wonder, I wander, I wonder.
Mm.
But I'm like, I'm such a traveler. Like, that's my spirit. And of all the places I go, I have more connection to more places than not. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There will be like, I could give you a story about Salt Lake City that made me be like, wow, I could be here. Denver,
yeah.
Seattle. There's like just, that's mm-hmm. just the United States, you know, then we can't even talk about the world.
Right.
There's so many places I want to go. It's a wonderful feeling when you go to a city like Chicago and you're just like, I'm cool. I'm no thanks.
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
And I mean, and then the way you describe New York, like this, because it's like I wanted to love New York more than anything. Like that was the town that I was going to live in. When I was growing up and I would go visit New York, I was like, this is where I'm going to live. This is where artists live. This is where like hardened, cool artists are at work, you know? And it just was like such a toxic relationship that I fought for so hard, and like leaving it in my wake, it's like this thing where I do have fond memories of it. And when I go back and visit, I like will have days in the city where I'm like, yeah, see, this place is, there's nowhere like this place. There's nowhere like the energy of this place. There's nowhere with this architecture and this hum and this, you know, this energy. But then all the, like something will happen where I'll be like, yep, that's why.
Yep.
That's why. Cause fuck this place. Cause
did you ever like stand on a street corner in New York City while looking for apartments and just start crying uncontrollably? Cause I have in the pouring rain, you know?
Yeah. If that's, there's like New York City bingo of like things that you have to experience to be a New Yorker. And one of them is
give me five.
Public meltdown is definitely one of them.
Okay, seeing somebody shit themselves on public transport. Yes. Okay. Yep.
Seeing somebody shit themselves. So I just went there in April with my nieces and nephews and my mom and dad. And I kept telling my nieces and nephews whenever we would see something, I'd go, that's New York City bingo. I'd get like, so good for you guys. Like, you're only here for a week. And like, that's one of them. I was like, so, you know, so like seeing someone shit themselves. The other one is like being on a train with a person who is very scarily unhinged,
yes,
who's like threatening everyone in the train car, telling everyone in the train car that they're gonna kill them. And you have to like tell the, if you're with tourists, you have to be like, it's okay, I don't think he's going to kill us.
Yeah.
Like, he keeps saying he's going to kill us, but like he's not aware that we're here.
Like, and then he's, another sweet bingo moment is to see somebody playing music in a subway that like that breaks your heart and like tears your soul open and is the best sonic sound you've ever heard in your entire life.
And you're just like, cool that you got this gig and that like people are stopping by and watching you, but also so heartbreaking that this is where you are and that like this might be it, is like getting to play in the subway and it's the most amazing music you've ever heard.
Yeah. I always try to film those because, you know, just sharing it, you know, I'm walking through the airport and I see someone sing and if they move me, I'm like, I'm always one to like take a video, post it to my story because,
yep.
Oh boy, do I know what it's like to wonder if anyone will hear you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, the other one that they got to experience was just like train traffic. We got delayed on a train for an hour and a half underground because there was switching problems, they kept saying, up ahead. But they were just like, what are we doing? We were just stuck in a tunnel underground for an hour and a half. And I was like, yes, this is – like, so when people complain about the traffic in L.A., I always try to remind them that, like, you could be in a tube underground with a bunch of other people with no cell service for – and you don't know how long. Like,
yeah.
There's not – like, you can't, like, see ahead and be like, oh, it clears up here. You're just in there.
Yeah.
And you don't know when it's going to be done.
Yeah. For some reason, that's all hitting me with like such a sweet nostalgia. It's funny. Yeah. It's funny how something, this is healing, but something from your past that's like traumatic or that feels like that's awful can somehow on a Sunday afternoon, you can hear it and be like, wow, how sweet to be stuck in a subway. I love that. Love that memory.
There's something like you, I think the way you described it, like this kind of like jilted lover, that there's always something there. There's something super romantic about that town, and there's something super romantic about like spending a week in that town and like and walking around in different neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And there is this sort of like, you can't help but be attracted to it, but it also is like very abusive and like just sort of shows you constantly that it doesn't really give a shit about you.
Yeah.
And
I have this crazy moment. I've said this in an interview once, and I'm going to then say something else after I say the story, cause it's going to sound like name dropping, and it literally is. But I moved to LA in 2011 after being in New York. I was on Broadway. I had been doing music and really want.
What'd you do on Broadway?
I did a show called Spring Awakening, which.
Oh my God. I didn't know you were in Spring Awakening.
Yeah. I was in the original company of it. I came in to replace like right after they won the Tony, and the Grammy, I joined the cast and then finished that show on Broadway.
Amazing.
Crazy experience.
Wow.
We're not even getting to the name drop moment yet.
Mm-hmm.
But basically I knew that like music was always something I wanted to do. And I was sort of like scared and afraid. I was working. My day job was in real estate. I was showing apartments in New York. So I was like, you know, drifting farther and farther from what I wanted to be doing. And eventually I sort of like saved up enough money and was just like, I'm going to quit New York. I'm going to go to LA. I'm going to like pursue music. That's what I've always wanted to do. You know, I'm like thinking I didn't know. And that was definitely the time where it was either Nashville or LA, but I went to LA and I ended up at a party. It was Grammy week. Ended up at a party. And this woman that I know from Nashville was at the party, and she is an older woman. So she knows a lot more people. And she was like, Morgan, do you want to meet Stevie Nicks? And I was like, yes, please. And she's like, she's right here. And it was literally like, it was like, if this is my microphone, like right here, it was literally like, she's right here. And it was like, hello.
Hello.
And I think back to that moment because here I am, 2011, Morgan. And I'm at this party. I'm pretty sure Lana Del Rey performed, you know, I don't know how I don't really know how I got there, but I was there. And for some reason, Stevie Nicks like sat with me on this couch for like an hour talking to me about like her life and words of wisdom about LA. And I'm like, why did she talk to me is a question that I have thought of before. And I do think it was because in a room like that, where there's so many people trying to get her attention and sort of needing something from her, I was just like a very gentle presence of a kid, definitely in awe of her, but also not like asking her for an autograph or time or a handout. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
But yeah. This is coming right from New York. And she said to me, she was like, now like LA will walk right over you if you don't keep moving. And I was like, now that's interesting because New York has the reputation for being a town that can like, you know, it's always moving, never city that never sleeps, like all that stuff. New York has that image, but she's saying this about LA. And what she was saying is that in LA, it's so beautiful and, you know, pristine and pretty that sometimes the mirage of the city is that it looks like, you know, it looks chill and peaceful, but if you're not moving, if you're not like keeping that fire lit, this city will walk right over you. And, you know, that couldn't have been, it couldn't have been better timing. I needed that so much because I had come to LA pretty broke and broken. And that advice, now it was, nothing was overnight for me. It was literally, that was 2011. And I signed my first record deal in 2015. So, you know, that's 4 years later. And in that time I, you know, did anything I could for money, but it was definitely something I came back to that was like, if this town is not going to generate my energy, I'm going to have to generate my own energy and I'm going to have to be the one that keeps moving. And I kept that fire, you know, definitely past points where it could have burnt out so many times because of what she said.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, there's so many things about that story where, like, one is, you know, in New York, you might bump into a celebrity once in a blue moon because the city's so densely packed that, like, you can bump into people just walking around on the street. But LA is like, oh, they're like, they're everywhere. They're everywhere. Like, you get invited to a party and you're like, oh, everyone here is like a big celebrity. And then also it is so easy in this town to get lulled into, I think a lot of people move here with big ideas and big dreams. And then they're just like, actually, it's just kind of nice to live here. And I'm just going to sort of have like a job and just sort of be here and enjoy the weather. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but like if you have goals and if you have dreams and like there's a reason why you're here, you do need to have a sense of urgency. And like you are essentially responsible for keeping your motor running.
I had another friend that said New York is a river and LA is a lake. Where in New York, the sort of current is built into it. But in LA, it's this still body of water. But the minute you start flapping your hands and like making movement, it's like a ripple effect. Do you know what I mean? But it's not as built in, you know, as New York is. And, you know, I love water references. And I also love, like, I'll never enter the conversation. I'll never enter the chat on New York versus LA. Like, they're literally like, I'm in a poly relationship with New York and LA and there's no sense in being like, either one of them are my favorite. They both break me in different ways. And they also both like turn me on in ways I could never explain.
I love that. That's fantastic. And we are getting into a little bit of your career in the music industry, which is really what I wanted to talk to you about, but it's great to like start off with that background. I also wanted to just like get a sense of like who you are, where you come from, what you're about. But we talked a little bit about how, you know, the pros and cons of social media, that there's definitely times on social media where you're just like, this is the bane of humanity. This is going to be our downfall. This is ruining everything. And then there's times where you're like, this is actually a really beautiful tool for engagement and for connection and for communication. And also in the entertainment industry, it's sort of this really cool tool where like there are opportunities and doors and pathways being opened up for artists that never existed before. We've existed in an industry of gatekeepers and like finding a way to appease the gatekeepers and be in the same room with the gatekeepers and meet the people who know them so that they can introduce us to them and always needing to know the right people. And suddenly with social media, and we talked a little bit about like GarageBand and Ableton and the tools that are available to people, more and more independent artists are having access to things that they never had access to before. And, you know, like my experience with that is like, I mean, obviously I have an audience because of social media that I never would have had otherwise. But one of my favorite things that happens on social media to me is like, I meet people that I don't know how I would have met that person if they didn't somehow stumble across one of my videos. And I love when I meet someone who I didn't know before, who I'm just kind of like, I don't know who this is. They reach out, they DM, and I'm like, I don't know who this is. And I look them up and I'm like, holy shit, this person's awesome. And that was the case with you.
Aww.
When you reached out, I was like, I don't know who this is, but you were like very nice. You reached out and you were like, hey, I think we like became mutuals. I must have seen one of your videos, and you DM'd and you were very nice. And then I looked you up and I was like, oh my God. I was like, this person's incredible. And then I went on a deep dive on your music videos, on like the stuff that you've been doing. And I was just blown away by what an amazing,
that's very sweet.
Like,
I mean,
you are
equally a great artist. You are, you know, so good at social media. I just feel like I have no idea what I'm doing on the internet, but
nobody does
appreciate that you thought the music, you know, I sort of come to it like a lowly musician being like, hello internet, like how might I like connect with you today? Do you know what I mean?
Well, we are in an era right now where the industry wants every musician. I'm actually going to Pop Montreal in September to talk about musicians marketing themselves on social media and stuff like that. And it really frustrates me, to be honest, that like the industry wants everyone, no matter what your discipline is, to be good at making engaging social media content. So you could be a painter, you could be a dancer, you could be a choreographer or a singer-songwriter, but like you also have to be a good content creator. And that's like that part of it frustrates me because I'm just like, well, that's not what everyone's thing is. And we shouldn't expect someone who's an amazing singer and songwriter and performer to also be super proficient or even care about making good TikToks.
Yeah. Like I want to say, I echo that. I think, you know, the part that I'm, there was a Brian Eno quote, you know, Brian Eno, famous musician who people can look up, but he had this quote about like, basically with new mediums and new like formats, the sort of like cringe, like clunky aspects of that medium will become the like the what's the word, like it'll become the signature of that era, you know? So like vinyl and like the sort of like you know, the sound of vinyl, which is now a plugin you can like put on, you know, music, like the sound of vinyl, like sort of like as the vinyl moves across the record, like that sound is signature to a vinyl. With CDs, you've got this like distortion that's like signature to CDs. Mm-hmm. Now we're moving into TikTok as its own medium, and like some of the, you know, cringe like aspects of it that are deeply cringe to me. Like I cannot convincingly play my song for my boyfriend for the first time in my car. I'll never do it. I could never do it. But it's you know, it might be signature to the medium, but there are also things that I'm like, I can't do it. I can't be a part of it. But I will say this, because I was dropped by my label in March of 2020, which is, you know, sort of, I think, where we reconnected this week, because I have just been like, the disillusion that I feel and see with artists being like, how do I use social media? How do I do this? What am I even doing? I don't know. I have no answer, but I do know that I have my story. That's the only story I have. And I'm going to tell that story. So, you know, using social media to be like, in March of 2020, I was dropped by my then record label. So I went from having management and a label to having no management and no label. And the only thing that changed was that I didn't have a label, but I was still me. But that same day, Billie Eilish tweeted that her song Bad Guy had 5 songs that inspired it, and one of them was my song Home. So you can imagine I was having a heartbreak of a personal thing while my phone was literally on fire. Like I've never had I've never had more tweets ever.
This is like what this is the aspect of the story that I was like, oh my God, that's like, I'm always looking for because there's always people that I want to talk to on the podcast, but who are doing cool things. But I'm like, what is it what's going to be the thing that I want to focus on? And it's this specifically. So let's actually go back to 2015. I want to see like what the ride is of like getting signed to, you know, what your life, because what I find so inspiring about the story is how right there in that day of getting dropped and also getting the tweet from Billie Eilish, it's like this happens all the time to people who are trying to do trying to make it in the entertainment industry, is like you are simultaneously always carrying failure and disappointment and success. Hopefully sometimes you're just carrying failure and disappointment for months and months or years on end. I know I've been there. And sometimes you have a streak where it feels like you can't miss and like you're just hit after hit after hit. But like there's also these days where you're just like, I don't really know how to feel, because I this thing went away that was really important, but this thing happened that presents a whole new opportunity.
Yeah.
And you have to like hold the space for feeling the disappointment while also feeling the excitement. Let's take us through
the
journey.
I think the journey sort of like, there's many beginning points, but I would say 2014 is when I wrote a song called XX, which is on my first album, Vital. But it was the first song I wrote, and the lyric is Kiss, Kiss, but I wrote it down, the lyrics, as XX. And I never changed that. But I remember hearing that song and being like, something has shifted. Like, there's just something brand new in this song, and I'm not just going to, this was the era of like blogs and stuff like that. I'm not just going to like release it right now. I'm going to like, maybe I can get a blog to like share it or something like that. But in the meantime, I had done a cover of Ain't Too Proud to Beg, the Temptation song, but like in my style. And it started charting on like the blogosphere kind of world or whatever. Tiesto is this electronic DJ. I had a couple songs on his album, like singing on it. And that was just because I wrote these songs that ended up getting passed around, and Tiesto heard them and put them on his album. But this is like, I'm unknown in sort of like my own music. It's just like this cover is up and these features are out there. And I had these songs that I was like,
and this is, you're independent at this point.
Totally, you're independent.
So again, like, this is so cool that you can do this in today's world. Like, this didn't used to exist, that you could like put a song out on the internet and somehow it can get to Tiesto and you can be featured. You know,
well, those weren't out on the internet when Tiesto got them. That is part of the music industry that's always there, which is you're writing songs and then those songs get passed around to A&Rs and different things or whatever. And that's almost like a luck. Lightning in a bottle, right place, right time, right song, right moment. Actually, his A&R had passed on it. And then Tiesto was in the studio with a DJ and he was working on it. And then Tiesto was like, I want that. So that's a podcast in itself. But
yeah,
but basically I was independent. And this was the first time that like music, I remember writing in my journal, like more than my mom has heard my music. Do you know what I mean? Like more than like, you know, 10 people have heard my song. And, but it was still like, I had these songs that I had made, and I'll always go back to make the music, just make your music, like in whatever way you want. And I was sort of like, I need to figure out what I want to do with it, but I don't want to like put it out right away. It's hard to take this long story and make it short, but I'm going to try to just hit highlights because it basically was like, I answered a Craigslist ad to like be on one of those like Judge Judy shows because I was like gonna pay cash and I was like, I'll take any job for money. Do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And you know, people are like independent, whatever, blah, blah, blah. This is again 2015, which is a very different time than now, but the principle is still the same. I like needed money. When I got offered this deal for these songs that I had recorded that I wanted to find a team to help me put out, and they were offering me money and to stand behind the songs that I was like excited about, I took the deal because I needed money. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that, what that taught me was also like, there are things where, you know, Katy Perry, Bruno Mars, name a musician who famously hasn't been dropped by a label. Bruno Mars, I think, is on his third or fourth label. I can't remember. But it's like, you don't remember those stories, even though it's quintessential to the story of the music industry, is that people get dropped. But, you know, I took that journey as far as it could go, to the point that it was, as we were approaching the pandemic, I could feel that everything was shifting, that like, the internet was shifting, budgets were shifting. There was just like, you know, it was sort of falling apart. And that's where, you know, wonder was, I wonder if anyone will hear this, you know, because I've got this song and I've got this story, but like, I'm about to for sure lose the one pathway that I know how to share music, you know?
Yeah.
But that was where, when the pandemic hit, when I was dropped, and when, call it universe, call it whatever you want, that like, that Billie Eilish tweet was sent the same day. It was like it helped overshadow the sort of like loss I was feeling with the label. And interestingly enough, well, I'll get to that in a second, but it was like, when she sent that tweet, it was like, okay, the one path that I know is gone. But like, I could either fall to my knees and like be like, I'm done, which I think about all the time. But it was also mm-hmm. like in that moment, the lyric is, I wonder if anyone will hear this. Like, will I go broke trying to keep on? The lyric is not like, I know that people are going to hear this, or I know exactly how I'm going to make money doing it. It's just literally, I wonder if anyone will hear this. And I would, you know, I always think about like, in 20 years, will I be happy that I did something, or will I be like, you know, pissed at myself? I would be pissed at myself in 20 years if I didn't just put out that song, you know?
Right.
Now, at the time, this is 2020, my old label, they didn't have a deal with TikTok, so their music wasn't allowed on the platform. So I got on TikTok the day that Wonder came out, and there was a video from a teacher using my song in a video, you know, which sounds like that's what happens. But this is like brand new to me. This teacher was like using Wonder, and she was like, I wonder if I'll be a good teacher for like my, you know, for like the kids that are, you know, of color or marginalized queer kids. Like, will I be a good teacher, you know, through this pandemic? Will I be a good teacher while also being a good mother? Like, will I, you know, all this stuff. And I, you know, do edit it being like, I hear you. Like, these questions are exactly what I'm talking about. And that basically just set off a chain reaction of the song, you know, going viral on TikTok and then going viral on Spotify and, you know, having all these moments and then of course labels reaching out. Do you know what I mean? But it was like, I was not ready at that time to just like go back to being on a label. You know, it was like, I also knew that like there are things that I want to do with the song, with like the upcoming music that I have now released. And I wasn't going to join a label at that moment and do what I was envisioning to do, which was like, I want to take Wonder and I want to like, I want to let it like touch as many people and have as many different versions as I possibly can, you know?
How do you wind up on Jimmy Kimmel singing that song with Sarah Bareilles?
Well, because Sarah Bareilles heard the song and asked me to do a duet of it. And once Sarah Bareilles joined the song, Jimmy Kimmel, which I had played before.
Right.
They were immediately like, yeah, this will be the first television performance of that song.
And it's a fantastic performance. I watched that today. It's fucking great.
Thank you.
You guys sound amazing.
Thank you. Live. Fully live.
Yeah.
Shot in Rockwood Music Hall, which is a venue in New York that is the first place that I played a full night of my original music in New York City. It's a tiny club, but you know, they were still doing remote shootings during the pandemic, and Sarah was in New York, I was in LA. It was either like, I'm going to do Nashville where I'm from, or LA because I'm here, or New York because I can do it at the venue where, like, when I first played a show there, I'm going to cry.
I love it.
I mean, I think, like, there are times that I just want to, like, give up because I still don't know how to keep on. Do you know what I mean? But,
yeah.
But like, back in 2009, when I played my first show with original music in New York City at Rockwood, there was no like, well, I'm going to do this if I can guarantee that in 12 years I'm going to play on television multiple times and I'm going to have millions of streams. It was just like, I love it and I want to get up on stage and I want to share it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So to do Wonder, which is, I wonder if anyone will hear this, at the venue that was the first place I ever even like uttered the courage to share an original song. That's what that moment means to me. You know, I think,
yeah.
I think in, you know, I'll never be great at social media, but I'll try to share my story in whatever way I can. And I'm learning, but it's like, even with that post recently on TikTok where it's like dropped and Billy tweets and then Sarah Bareilles joins and then millions of streams. And then I got offered a deal that feels so good and I have taken it. It's like, because that's my story. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if my story can help it inspire others and inspire me to keep going, then I'm going to just keep trying.
Yeah. it is really inspiring. And I don't think that you're, just for the record, I don't think that you're like any better or worse at social media than anybody else. People like, nobody knows what the fuck they're doing.
Wow.
And, like, I think that you're doing just fine. Like, you know, so when I said earlier, like, I don't think all musicians should know, have to know how to do it. I wasn't saying that to be like, it's fine that you're bad at it, Morgan, because I don't think that you're bad at it.
I am, but sure, I'll take it. I mean,
I think that you're just as good at it as I am. Like, I feel like the difference, I feel like I got lucky early on with a few hits, and now, like, there's people who like my style, but I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. And oftentimes when I'm really proud of a video, it doesn't do well. And when I fart out a video in an afternoon, it like takes off and I'm like, okay, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what people want to see. But I think that you're doing great, but also like, it's like, mostly I just want artists like you to be able to succeed on the merits of the music. Like, the music's so good and you're so good at what you do that it's like, does this person also have to be great at like making viral memes?
I mean, sometimes, you know, I've had a lot of experiences this year. I'm also writing a ballet and performing it at the Nashville Ballet in February.
Tell me about that.
Well, that's something that, it was a long time coming. I've been talking with the artistic director here for many years. I was supposed to do a project May of 2020, and we all know what that turned into. But the creator of it turned it into a ballet film. So I had this experience of writing songs for this ballet, but it turned into like a film, which is really cool. But I kept talking with the artistic director, and he shared this idea with me about like basically set in a graveyard and using stories from the past and also like unknown stories. There's so many stories of people that we don't get to hear because history doesn't tell them. So it's like pulling these old stories and bringing them to life in a graveyard. And I just, you know, that set my brain reeling, and I started writing music just based off his like talking about it. And that turned into like us collaborating on this ballet. So I say that just to be like, you know, I have friends who are painters and principal ballet dancers and all this stuff. And like, they're not on social media. And I think sometimes there's this really great post going around right now about like, you know, does a song have to go viral for it to be like considered a success? The thing is, you don't know. Like, I have this feeling that Wonder's about to have like a huge viral moment, even though it had one before, but like, you never know what could happen with something. It could get used in a film and all of a sudden like have a moment. So, you know, for,
I mean, Kate Bush, 35 years later, the number one song in the world.
That scene is so good. And that's a perfect example of like, of just make your art, like just make it, you know, play around on the internet, because to ignore the internet would be to, you know, is a little like, if you're interested in trying things out on the internet, like just try it out. Do you know what I mean? But like, play around with it. There's so much that could happen with music and with art. And the reason I bring up the ballet is because I just think that there's like other ways to reach people and to create things than just for TikTok or for, you know, sort of like whatever platform you're thinking about. There's like art for art's sake.
I mean, yeah, I think that that's so like, while I say all that stuff of like, I don't want everyone, I think it's maybe not great that everyone is being funneled into this one way of marketing, that everyone needs to be good at making viral videos. At the same time, there is this other part of it that I talked about earlier and that we're sort of getting to, which is like, this tool has never existed for artists ever before. And for the longest time, it was about, like, you had to be in one of the coastal cities, or you had to be in a town where you could, like, for actors, like, I'm an actor, like, people used to show up on studio lots and just wait around all day long to see if they could, get a job in the background of a movie. They would just wait around, you know, and just be like, are there any jobs today for me to pop on? Maybe I could say a line, maybe I could be a waiter. You know, they would just, like, hang out around studio lots, because that's, what else are you supposed to do? Because all the jobs were going to people who knew people who were producing the movies already. So you were like, well, I just have to be in front of them. I have to be seen. There wasn't such thing as a place where you could go and film yourself doing something and be seen by regular people out in the world. And they could say, we like this person. And then producers could go, oh, well, people seem to like this person and their face and how they say things. And it's like, I have all these friends that are such talented musicians that are touring all the time, and they're doing it the traditional way of, like, they play shows, they make relationships with other musicians, they tour, and that sustains them. But I'm also like, man, like, I know, and it's almost like the vibe is that they're it almost feels like they're, like, too cool for social media, or that they're just, or it's just the thing where they're like, I just don't get it. I don't know what I should do with it. But I'm like, if there is a way that we could find that works for you and your specific style to get you in front of people on the internet more, and maybe just film some, like, artfully done live recordings of some of your songs or something, and, like, chop those up into usable content for TikTok and Instagram, something that you can live with that's not cringy and that looks good and feels good. Like,
listen, people would pay you lots of money if you helped them to figure that out. So if you're looking for a little side gig and you want to help musicians figure that out, people will pay you for that.
Well, here's the thing too, is it's so frustrating because, like, as I'm sure you've run into or seen, like, the high quality, artfully done content sometimes isn't the stuff that people want to see on TikTok. Sometimes what people want to see on TikTok is you sitting in your car and going, like, oh my God, this song I just made. And I'm like, covering your mouth while you listen to it. And I'm like you said, I'm like, I could never, I can't do that video without making fun of that video. Like, I can't.
Oh my
do
God.
It seriously.
Lil Nas X did such a good, like, he was like, he basically was like, you know, the next viral TikTok singer, like, point of view, you're the next viral TikTok singer. And it was like, twinkle, twinkle, little bitch. You know, it was like, yeah, because the nostalgia thing. But, you know, good for you. Like, good for you that is.
Yeah, because a lot of my musician friends who I think are, like, really, really talented, I'm like, if I were to make a video for you, it would be like a really artfully shot video of you sitting in, like, a stark space just playing your song. And we would just make it look really smooth and really good and really, like, pretty and classy and elegant and minimalistic, and just, like, strip it back and make it really simple. But TikTok would probably rather just see you in your room playing it straight into the phone with, like, worse audio quality. And I don't know why, but, like, that seems to be so. Because it's like my artistic sensibility sometimes is a little bit offended by what does well on TikTok. Like I said, the things that I'm most proud of, my music videos and stuff, and video, like, videos where I'm like, I really spent a lot of time on this one. Like,
to call to it. Like, I really liked when you made a post with artfully shot, beautiful song and video, and then you made a, like, sort of DIY sort of, like, this fucking sucks that, like, that didn't have reach, and then that got reach, which brought reach to the other thing. Like, you are, not to give away your secrets, but it is literally, like, that is using the medium, as Brian Eno says, using the cringe parts of the medium to actually become the signature, which is, you know, it's at the end of the day, truly at the end of the day, I want to have a good time. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I want to connect with people. I want to, like, meet other creators. I want to, like, connect with fans. I want reach. I want the music to reach and, you know, and
yeah, through whichever means. Like, it doesn't really need to be in, like, a video that I'm like, I got the best DP for this. I got the, you know, I got a great choreographer. It's like, I just want people to hear the song. I just want people to connect with it.
There's also, like, it's also like, don't forget, and I've seen it for myself, because even though TikTok wasn't a thing when Home was released, like the song Home did okay. And then when I released the music video a year later, it blew up because the music video blew up online on YouTube. So like, don't forget that I have to remind myself this, to be honest, like, don't forget the magic of like anything could happen. Truly, you know, like it might, of course, everyone's talking about TikTok, but like, don't forget that there's like, there's songs being synced in movies and TV. There's, you know, there's actual streaming action. There's, you know, some other creator using your song on an app. And you know what I mean? There's like a bunch of different ways that things can reach people. So I just try to like, I try to cut myself some slack when it's like that post that you've probably seen this week where it's like, if something doesn't reach, it's not because something is like, everything is off the rails and wrong. It's just like, keep it moving, like keep trying something else. And also know that the art, that the thing you're creating is the long game. And sometimes don't get so stuck in the short game.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Just keep moving forward. I feel like that's been a theme in the story that you shared. And it's definitely been a theme in my story so far, is just like, for better or worse, with ups and downs. I mean, you talked about being at a time where you're like, I'm just going on this Judge Judy show because I'm doing anything for cash. I lived that way for a long time where I was like, I'll do anything just to make a couple hundred bucks and keep myself afloat, keep myself moving forward.
Yeah.
And so much of the journey has just been continuing to move forward, even when it feels like, have I completely like gone all in on something that's just a lost cause? Like I saw so I wanted to call this episode Riding the Waves with Morgan, because that video that you posted about being dropped in 2020 and sort of the up and down of like, oh, but then Billie Eilish tweeted, which by the way, when I listened to Home, I was like, oh, after hearing that, when that first bass comes in on Home, that's exactly, you're like, oh, I know exactly. Well, you got that rhythm, that dum, 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 you know, like, and that's that bad guy. Dum, 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 dum. I was like, she totally was influenced by your song. That's dope.
Yeah.
But it's really cool to hear those ties. But like this idea of riding the waves and the idea of like continuing to move forward and continuing to be patient. There's this producer that I follow on TikTok named Shane Lance, who always like gives tips to people in the industry and producing tips and things like that. And he made a video the other day where he was like, you might feel like you're too old to do something in the music industry. That's definitely something that I think exists in, what's that sound? Is that you?
Oh my God. Is that my piano coming through you?
Yeah.
Oh, crazy. Cause it's not coming through me. That's crazy. Wow. Amazing.
I was like, oh, I was hearing it. He was talking about how, you might feel like you missed your shot. And you know, as in the music industry especially, it feels like after 25, you're like, well, that's it. Missed it. If I wasn't discovered by 21, you know, like in really, really by 25, then
let me, I'm sure you've seen, I think I went viral because American Idol called me to be like, would you come on the show? Would you audition? This was a month or two ago. And and then they were like talking about my story. And they're like, wait, how old are you? And I was like 35. And they're like, oh, I'm sorry. We cut off at 29. And I was like, do your research. Like, bye. Get out of here. You know what I mean? And I am 35 and I just signed a record deal. So like, you know, Tina Turner had her first hit in her 40s. So like, you know, there's, yeah, anyone wants to tell you that you're old, you know, honestly, I can't wait for you to hear this new album because like, I am so touching on that. And I'm so excited about not pretending I'm 22 and just, you know, being like, yeah, at 35, I signed a record deal. Like, let's go. Let's change the whole game.
Yep. And there's something about just like embracing that too. Like some of my favorite bands that like, I know make me an older guy because I'm still listening to this band, but they're still putting out records, and they're putting out what I think is like their best work. And I'm like, I know that it's only me and the OG fans who are listening to this latest record, and that like the young kids aren't listening to the latest record by the Killers. Like, I know that wow. they're just not anymore. But like, I think that Brandon Flowers is like, it's one of my favorite bands. And I think Brandon Flowers is like doing some of his best songwriting in the last couple of years. And I love it.
Cause I'm just like, love Brandon Flowers. I mean,
yeah, I'm like, why not? Why not put out your best record at 45?
Why
like,
not? Why yeah. not?
You know, and I know that Gen Z's not listening to it, but that's okay. He's still selling out arenas. Like, it's fine.
I mean, that's the other thing. Like, he is still selling out arenas. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's just like there's people out there. Just keep making, you know, if anything, for each other, just like keep making, keep connecting. Cause like, it doesn't matter what age somebody says is the thing that that's the limit. You know, I'm sorry, American Idol, I'm not going to be on your show, but like, great, I'll go be my own fucking person. Can I say that?
Yeah. I've said fuck so many times in this recording already. But like the thing that this guy said, this, Shane Lance that I follow on TikTok, is he was like, you know, music industry, entertainment industry, whatever it is that you're doing, everything in life, it's like waves. And like, you missed a wave. So that wave that you missed when you were 22, that opportunity that didn't come through, that like, you missed that wave, or you missed the wave at 25, or you missed the wave at 26. Just wait, there's always another wave. And I think that's been a theme, but also for me, it's just moving forward. It's like, whatever setbacks I experience, whatever disappointments I experience, the thing that's kept my trajectory moving forward is just not leaving. It's just like staying and just waiting and trusting that something else will come. And it really can be hard, because sometimes it really feels like, surely that's it. Like, surely I've fully tapped every possibility and that's it, you know? No. But I think as long as you continue to like be a hard worker and just stay and continue moving forward, you have to continue doing stuff. It's kind of like we talked about with LA, like being a lake. Like, if you're just sitting in the lake and just holding still, nothing's going to happen. You have to continue moving. But as long as you keep doing that, and I definitely see that in your story, that you just are taking the lumps, taking the hits, letting American Idol go, oh, never mind, you don't make the cutoff, and going, okay, next thing.
Yeah. I wanted that story to be way more viral on TikTok, because it was just like, this is absurd. Absurd. One Google, you would know my age, but like, get, you know, bye-bye. You are the weakest link, goodbye, to anyone that knows that reference.
Which, that's also because we're old. We know that.
Listen, I'm ready to embrace it, and I'm ready to fiercely enter a new dimension of my life. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm not stopping. You're not stopping. You just keep going. You know.
I think the best is yet to come for you. I think that like, you've got a really cool story behind you, but it sounds like, and it feels like, you've got even cooler things coming up, and that's what I'm excited to watch and excited to follow.
Thanks for having me. It's great to connect like this, and I can't wait to. I'm going to invite you on my podcast so that I can just ask you questions about your journey.
Let's absolutely do it. Okay. Where can people follow you and keep up with you and keep up with the journey?
If you search Morgan MORGXN, you'll find me. But Morgan Official on Instagram and TikTok. And then, just search MORGXN on any platform and you will find me.
And listen to some tunes.
Yeah.
After you're done listening to the podcast, go listen to some Morgan songs. What's coming? Is there anything coming up that you're like, people got to know about this, people got to watch this, or people got to like, you got like a single coming out? Or when's the album? Is the album just in process?
The album has just come out. Meridian is out. But I'm working on a new album. I've got a song with a band called Hembree coming out September 9th. We're playing a festival this week in Columbus.
Amazing.
But check out the song Float coming out September 9th. And then I'll be disappearing while I work on new music.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Amazing. Morgan, thanks so much.
Thank
for
you.
For making time for me.
Yeah, great to see you. Great to talk to you. And Thanks.
Great to see you too, and like officially like talk as people.
We're friends. Yeah. I love it.
Yep.
Talk
wonderful
to you later.
Talking with you.
Okay,
bye. Bye-bye. So that's it. That's my conversation with Morgan. Thanks again to him for making the time to stop in. I didn't say this at the beginning of the episode, but guess what I'm looking at right now? For over 2 years now, I've been doing this podcast and saying that thing at the beginning of every episode from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood. It's Wednesday night. It's 10 o'clock p.m. Wednesday night. And I'm staring across my desk in my home studio now. My home studio, which is a lot fancier than it was when I first started this podcast. When I first started this podcast, I was literally sitting underneath a blanket. I had a room divider that I would set up, and I would kind of put it close to the wall, and then I would hang a comforter over that, and I would sit down with my guests with like an air mattress propped up on one side, and the room divider on the other, and a blanket over us, and that was the recording studio. It was literally a blanket fort. That wasn't an exaggeration. And as I've continued to step up the production quality of my recording studio in my home space over the years, bit by bit, I've continued to affectionately refer to this space as the Blanket Fort, even though it no longer is a blanket fort. And right now, Wednesday night, I'm looking across my desk at this beautiful neon sign that says the Blanket Fort. I got this custom neon sign made, and it's kind of like the last piece that I needed to put in this studio to really christen it as like I've arrived. My home studio space is complete. I mean, I'm probably always going to be adding little pieces of gear because that process never ends. But like the video portion is on now. I got two cameras. I got two microphones. I got the neon sign in here. I'm ready to have guests in person in the space again. It's a great time over here. It's very exciting, and I'm thrilled about it. That's all I wanted to say. Go listen to some music by Morgan. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or by going to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. You have about 2 weeks left to order your copy of my new album, Beautiful Things, the Deluxe Edition, on my Bandcamp. There's about 2 weeks left on the campaign. The campaign is fulfilled. Like, we did it. We hit the mark. But if you order in the next 2 weeks, you're going to be part of the group of people who have their orders fulfilled by Bandcamp. After that, you're going to have to buy it from me, and you're going to have to cover the shipping from me. But if you buy it right now from Bandcamp, they're going to ship it to you. They're going to take care of everything. You got 2 weeks to go over to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, click on the merch tab, and buy that double vinyl if you have not already. Get on it. Okay, I thought I would leave you with a little treat here at the end of the show. This is a portion of a clip from YouTube of Morgan singing his song Wonder that we talked about in the episode with Sarah Bareilles on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. Enjoy. Take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. Love you so much. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Lately, I've been so disconnected. My feet don't want to touch the ground. Can't find my way through this dimension. When all these voices drown me out, I feel so far from my body. It's hard to find my way back. Everyone tells me I'm crazy. Well, maybe I am. Well, I wonder. I wonder if I'll ever